It's Monday, the 23rd of May, 2016. Happy birthday to Razul Butler. Basketball Monster Show brought to you by Loot Crate and Flipper1165. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be like Flipper1165 and sponsor the podcast, it's easy, it's straightforward. Leave a review on iTunes. It helps the podcast out immensely when I'm negotiating things with sponsors and people who are helping to bring the podcast to you guys, much like Loot Crate is today. And I can show them the reviews that you guys put forward. And it's tremendous when they look at the sort of user engagement and listener loyalty that you guys show to this podcast. So it takes a couple of minutes, and if you've got those couple of spare minutes, it's awesome. Plus, you get to sponsor a show yourself, so that would be awesome. I've said awesome too many times today, but we are here to talk New Orleans Pelicans. It's a season in review show for the Pelicans. If you are watching live, and you can watch each of these shows live on YouTube, as you're probably well aware by now, but if you are watching live and you want to interact with the show as it's going to air, tweet at me at redrock_bball. That is my Twitter account, which you can tweet at me obviously at any time, but during the show, for live interaction, for any comments or queries or questions or criticisms, I'm always open to that. So redrock_bball is the Twitter account. We're talking New Orleans Pelicans. We've got lots to talk about, and someone who's been suspiciously absent from the last couple of podcasts, I think he's back.
Let's get to it.
Michael Bolton, good to have you back. He has taken a little sabbatical just to get his get himself refreshed for the rest of the season reviews. But Mick is back, and we're ready to go. The Pelicans had let's be honest, a piss poor season by pretty much anyone's standards. They were a playoff team. They were an 8th seed in 2014-15. And obviously didn't finish that way this season. A lot of things changed. They fired Monty Williams. They brought in Elvin Gentry, which when it happened, a lot of people were pretty excited for. Elvin Gentry as an offensive assistant in Golden State, as a head coach in Phoenix, playing with some up-tempo offenses, and that was one of the criticisms of what Williams was doing, his offensive game plan previously in New Orleans with Tyreke Evans and Anthony Davis was not ideal, and Davis was being underutilized, so we thought this is going to unlock Anthony Davis. Didn't quite work out that way. Gentry made a lot of boneheaded decisions, a lot of baffling rotational moves and play calls and all that sort of stuff. Really seemed like, for some reason, for a guy who'd been a head coach prior, Gentry seemed like he was in over his head a lot of the times in New Orleans, and the team went backwards, partly to do with Gentry, but partly also to do with the fact that they suffered an extraordinary amount of injuries in New Orleans. We talk about Memphis suffering a ton, which they did, but they all seemed to come at the end of the season. New Orleans suffered it basically before the season started, and it continued all season. They ended with a record of 30-52. In terms of the upcoming NBA draft, they haven't really had a draft selection for quite a while due to trades, ridiculous trades, let's be honest, trading a first-rounder for Omer Asik, trading away picks for Drew Holiday, the pick that became Nerlens Noel, and then the pick that became Dario Saric for the Philadelphia 76ers. They do have their pick this year, so they're picking pick 6. They've also got two early second rounders, picking pick 39 and pick 40, so they should be able to bring in some talented players with those picks. The 39 and 40 might not be able to contribute a massive amount, but they are picks. There are three of them, and we haven't really seen rookies on this team. We haven't seen rookies on this team, full stop. They just don't bring rookies in, and it's about time they need to go back to that sort of mentality, I think, because so the players they got, and you look at their roster, yes, they've got Anthony Davis, who at one point was considered the number one young player in the game, which after the season he had, which we'll talk about in a sec, his reputation has dipped considerably in some people's minds. But aside from him, what else do they have? They've got a very, very poor roster, and it's going to take a bit of work to try and rebuild everything that they've got here in New Orleans. If we look at their impending free agents, we've got Eric Gordon, who is an unrestricted free agent. We've got Ryan Anderson, who is an unrestricted free agent. We have Norris Cole, who is an unrestricted free agent, Kendrick Perkins, and Jordan Hamilton. And restricted, we have Tim Frazier and James Ennis. So, let's talk about these free agents. Eric Gordon is not coming back. Ryan Anderson is not coming back. I can't say 100%, but I am 99% sure that we will not see Eric Gordon or Ryan Anderson playing for this team next season. Kendrick Perkins, He's 31 years old. He does nothing. Maybe he's back. Norris Cole, one of the worst point guards in the NBA, in my opinion. Yes, he's priced at $3 million, but they took about 4 months to bring him back as a restricted guy last season. Didn't sign into a long-term deal. I'm not sure they're overly sold on Norris Cole coming back. He might not return. Tim Frazier is a restricted guy. I think they do bring him back. And to me, he fits into a Norris Cole role better than what Norris Cole does. And James Ennis showed a bit as a restricted guy as well. And I think they'd look to bring him back if the price was right. Same with Jordy Hamilton. Maybe they bring him back. But they're clearing a fair bit of space out. But what they're also clearing out is minutes. They're clearing out shots in the rotation. Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson were big parts of this team. Eric Gordon, the starting shooting guard. Ryan Anderson, the backup power forward, who in essence was a player who was playing 28 to 30 minutes a night as a starter level player. So there's two massive holes to fill in this team. The Pelicans are not a massive free agent destination, so bringing in high-level players is not going to be an easy task for them. That pick six that they've got, there's a big chance that that person, whoever comes in at that spot, and we don't know who it is at this point, but whoever comes in at pick six could find themselves in a significantly large role heading into next season. And again, we need to wait and see until that draft actually goes down, but there's a chance that that happens. They could also package Tyreek Evans in a trade, who's going to be on an expiring deal. They've got Drew Holiday, who's on one more year left on his contract at $11 million. These are guys who are definitely not guaranteed to be there next season with the Pelicans, maybe just going, we're retooling, let's just change everything around and see what we can get. They've got Tony Douglas, who has a non-guaranteed deal for next year, and Alonzo G has a $1.3 million player option. There's a chance that G declines that and tries to get himself $2 or $3 million, $4 million deal. It's possible. He's not a great player, but he was solid-ish. Tony Douglas, I think many people would be surprised that Tony Douglas is 30 years old. At this point, it feels like he has not been around that long. But there's another chance that he isn't back with this partially guaranteed deal that he's got for next season. So there's quite a few. Same with Bryce DeJean-Jones, who's a guy they signed at the end of last season. His deal, he's non-guaranteed. I would imagine that DeJean-Jones is back for next season. I think they will guarantee his deal. All right, New Orleans Pelicans, we've talked free agents. We'll talk about all those guys in a little bit more detail as we go through. But the big draw, the big name on this team is Anthony Davis, who almost unanimously was the number one player selected in fantasy drafts last season, pretty much unanimously, unless you followed what my advice was, and that was not to pick him number one. I would have picked him number two or number three in most cases. But that's not how he finished the season. He was the fifth-ranked player in 9-cat leagues. He was eighth in eight-category leagues. In an eight-minus-two punt situation, he was eighth as well. And these are well down on where he finished the year before. He was the number one 9-cat guy the season before, the number three 8-cat guy the season before, and he had a bit of a drop. And I think drafting him number one didn't cost you your season, but it obviously wasn't ideal, especially when Davis did not last out the season. Yet again, he played 61 games, 36 minutes a game, but the numbers he turned in were good. They were still top 10. 24 points, 10 rebounds, 2 assists, 1.3 steals, 2 blocks, 49 and 76. These are good numbers. He hit 0.6 threes, which was an additional string to his bow. But all these numbers that he's put up, they're downgrades on last season. He scored less points. Yes, 0.1 per game. He hit more threes. That's a great year change. We like that. But down from 2.9 blocks to 2 blocks, it's a big drop. The steals from 1.5 to 1.3, down. The field goals from 54 to 49, 5% down is huge. The free throws from 81 to 76, 5% down is huge. These are big changes, and that dropped him from the number one player down to the number five or six player, and depending on your format. What do we make of Anthony Davis? He has yet to play 70 games in an NBA season. And you heard me, or hopefully you heard me if you listened throughout the season, me getting a little bit irritated at general comments across social media about Anthony Davis, about the soft tag, which again is something that I just absolutely detest. It is just a ridiculous thing to say about this guy. Yes, he's had injury problems, but you know what? He had to shut it down at the end of the season because of a shoulder problem that he's been playing through for basically the last couple of seasons, he said. He had knee surgery as well, and it's going to keep him out a couple of months. So he was battling with a lot of injuries, and maybe those battles is something that caused his play to be subpar. There's a big chance of that. But people will always go, oh, look at him. He dove into the crowd and rescued a ball, and now he's injured. Cool. it did happen a lot. I understand that. And he did miss parts of, I think, 7 or 8 games during the season. And he was a real tough guy to use in DFS for that reason, because you spend $10,000 on Anthony Davis and then he goes out in the first quarter and it hurts. But his production wasn't that bad to draw the level of hostility that he got from the masses in terms of this guy's useless, he's terrible, and at this point, he is underrated, in my opinion. There are going to be people who refuse to take him in the top 5 next season, and I think that's an incorrect way to go about it. Again, it depends on your league format. In an 8-cat league, he's not as good as what he is in a 9-cat league because he does have fairly low turnovers like most big men. But he was surrounded by some horrible talent for big stretches. They could not get a full team together for the whole season, basically. And adjusting to this new lineup, new system, him shooting threes, it did impact him. I think that Davis ends up being underrated heading into next season. I wouldn't be surprised, and I think I would be pretty confident of him being a top 5 player again next season. Probably even, you know, challenging for that top 3 spot. But he does need to work on things. He needs to get that shooting back up. He needs to get his defensive numbers back up. And that could be a Gentry problem. The fact that the defense is different and taking him out of position for blocks, or the players that he's playing with being just absolutely craptacular, like Kendrick Perkins, like Omer Asik, who we'll get onto later, is just disgraceful in terms of a player. Davis this year, if you look at his advanced numbers, they dropped significantly. He had posted the worst block percentage of his career. He posted the worst steal percentage of his career. He posted the worst rebound percentage of his career. He posted by far the worst offensive rebound percentage of his career. He posted a win shares number of 7.2, which was just above his rookie number, worse than his 2 previous seasons. His win shares per 48 was equal to his rookie season. His box score plus minus was the worst of his career. These are all numbers that are not ideal, obviously. Still, they're good numbers. Yeah, win share 7.2 on a bad team is good. PER of 25 is good. Box score plus minus, he was at 2.2. Well, that's not so good considering he was at 7.1 last year. But big drop-offs in numerous areas for Anthony Davis. And probably the thing that stands out to me the most, when you look at his on-off now plus minus numbers, last year he was a plus 11.3. So the Pelicans, when he was on the court, were 11.3 points better per 100 possessions than when he was off the court. This year, they were actually worse 1.5 points when he was on the court. So him on the court meant the Pelicans were worse than if he sat off it. Now that obviously has limitations in looking at it, but it just shows a huge drop. That's a 12.8 points per 100 possession swing over what Davis did last year. And if you look at actually everything that he's done in terms of his on-off splits throughout his career, they haven't really ever been great, apart from 1 year. His rookie year, negative 1.2. The second season, 1.9. Last year, 11.3. Superb. This year, negative 1.5. So big, big drop-offs from Davis. And the questions are definitely out there. But if you're trying to acquire Anthony Davis in a dynasty league, there's never been a better time to do it than now. His value is at an all-time low, and it will probably never get lower than what it currently is. The narrative about him is out there, the softness, the regression, I'd rather have Towns than him, which is a fair enough argument to make, I understand that, but this time 12 months ago, Anthony Davis was the king. Who's going to topple him? He's the number one player for the next 5 years. He's the player that everyone wants to build their franchise around. He didn't lose his talent. This can all come back. And all it takes is for a guy who's still relatively young, you know, he's 22 years old, for his body to mature, for him to be able to shake off somewhat minor injuries and play through them. And that's not a mental issue with him. That's a body physicality thing. He's 22. This stuff can change very easily. Steph Curry's ankles is a prime example. Shit changes with your body as you get older. He becomes stronger and bigger and withstands his stuff. This is the best time to acquire Anthony Davis. However much your distaste might be for his softness or his inability to play through a season, if you want Anthony Davis in a dynasty league, you will never have a better opportunity of doing it than you will have at the moment. Until the first game kicks off next season, you won't have a better opportunity. He's injured for a start, so there's concerns about his knee. You will never have a better opportunity than acquiring Anthony Davis in the next 2 to 3 seasons. This is your time. Take advantage of it if you can. Don't go crazy. But remember, the potential for Anthony Davis is still obviously there. One season does not describe an entire career. I think that there is a big bounce back plan for Davis next year, and he could easily be a 25 and 11 guy with a 3.5 blocks over a steal at 52 and 80, and they are ridiculously good numbers, and they're back in the top two, and that is not a huge stretch to imagine that happening. So keep that in mind with Anthony Davis. Do not write him off. If you own him, don't be selling him cheaply, because you will end up regretting it, in my opinion. That's enough Anthony Davis talk. Tyreke Evans. Really disappointing year for Evans. Started off the season with knee problems, and that caused him to slide in drafts naturally. He came back and started playing fantastically. Really put up some good numbers until his knee went again. And he's just continually dealing with his knee problems. He played just 25 games and only 31 minutes a game. But in terms of per game value, 65th in 9-cat leagues, 42nd in 8-cat leagues. So despite how unappealing aesthetically his game looks, how it doesn't mesh with Davis, how you think Tyreke stop with his hero ball bullshit, when he's playing, the numbers are good. And they're really effective for fantasy. But 25 games is not enough, obviously. So where does this leave Tyreke Evans? These knee problems have been persistent for him. And we talked about Eric Bledsoe in the Suns podcast about, yeah, Bledsoe having knee problems, but different knees. When Evans just keeps recurring in the same knee multiple times during a season, that has me more worried. Someone having a serious knee injury than a serious ankle injury, like Ricky Rubio, don't care. Someone having two unrelated knee injuries and one on each side, don't care. Same knee multiple times in a season, more issue to me. And that's where I sit with Evans. Now, look, the numbers on the surface are great. 15 points, 5 rebounds, 6.5 assists, 1.3 threes, 1.3 steals, 44 and 80, and shot 39% from three. These are all fantastic numbers from Tyreke Evans, but where does he fit in the next couple of years in the NBA? Where does he fit with this team in the next couple of years? He feels like he's just a man without a spot, a man without a place. Is he a point guard? Maybe, but not really. Is he the perfect guy to pair with Davis? Absolutely not. If they are completely healthy, if Davis is healthy, if Evans is healthy, if Holiday is healthy, where does he sit? Does he play off the bench? Does he play as a secondary ball handler at the small forward position next to Davis and Holiday? I don't know where he fits. I know that he has got definite top 50 upside, but there's no way that you're taking him inside the top 50. He's probably a player you take around that 70 mark, maybe even later, and you might be able to get him at a pretty big discount. And again, like Davis, if for some reason you're thinking of acquiring Tyreke Evans, and it's not a horrible decision, this is the perfect time to do it, because again, how much lower can his value get? It can't get much lower, and that's partly the knee problem, and I understand that. So in terms of acquiring him, you've got to be able to take on a pretty big layer of risk in terms of dealing with this knee problem from him. But you hope that some of the things we saw from him, like the 39% three-point shooting, is that real? It probably isn't, because his previous five seasons, he shot 30, 22, 34, 20, 29. You don't think he's a 39% shooter, and 25 games isn't enough to convince me of that, but I like what he did. He's always going to be a decent assist accumulator, not a great floor general, but an assist accumulator. The steals are pretty solid. He's going to get over one, around 1.5 per game. That's just what he does. And he's going to score, and he's going to get to the rack, and he's going to shoot a decent field goal percentage. That's just what Tyreke Evans does. He was a guy I really, really liked as a rookie. Obviously, he's fallen off a little bit since then. But at this point in his career, you do have to be concerned about the knee injury. It is a long-term issue. He is 26 years old already, so he is heading into his prime. But just be aware. Just be a little bit weary of getting him. But again, the value for him now is as low as it's ever going to be. Well, that's not true. In, say, 3 or 4 years' time, it'll be much lower, because he'll be 30 years old, and he would have dropped right off. For now, I don't hate acquiring him, but you need to lowball the hell out of his owner and go super low and go, look, you know what, Evans is injured. Let me take him on. I'll give you Norris Cole. Maybe not that low, because that's ridiculous. I'll give you George Hill. I'll give you... I can't even think of someone. I'll give you... Give me a name. You're not listening, so you can't give me a name, because you'll listen to this later on. I'll give you... Yeah, Goran Dragic is an interesting one. I wouldn't give up Dragic, I don't think, for Evans. Derek Rose. Take Derek Rose, and I'll take Tyreke. I think that's a fair deal. That's the sort of deal I'd be doing, is if I had Derrick Rose, I'd be throwing him out there and trying to get Tyreek back, because I have more faith in Evans being able to put up fantasy stats than I do with Rose at this point. But there is a lot to be concerned about with Tyreek. In terms of what his advanced numbers show us, they're okay-ish. In terms of win shares per 48, which is probably the best thing, we're looking at him for the season because he played so few games. He was 7th on the team, and that's not a bad result. He was 1.7 in offensive box score plus minus, a 0 in defensive box score plus minus, and he finished 4th on the team in that metric. Again, not too bad. So decent numbers from Evans, and 18 PER. These are all pretty impressive stuff. And as a passer, yeah, he cuts the mustard in terms of what he's able to do. A 34.6 assist rate versus 17.1 turnover is pretty impressive. That's a 2-to-1 ratio there. So I do like what Tyreek Evans can do. I just do worry a bit. He is a guy that I do worry about with injuries. Speaking of worrying with injuries, Drew Holiday started off the season with minutes restrictions for quite a while, talking the first 2 months. And look, he was putting up really good numbers, but it was hard to rely upon him to play given he was sitting out back-to-backs. He was playing 20 minutes, 25 minutes a pop, but he struggled with that playing time in terms of his stats. Now, overall, 62nd ranked player in 9-cat leagues, 49th in 8-cat, which is absolutely amazing. But you look post-All-Star, 36th in 9-cat, 21st in 8-cat. That is the ability that Drew Holiday has. He is a tremendous player. He is a supremely underrated player, and he's 25 years old. He is not an old player by any stretch of the imagination. He played just 28 minutes a game this year, 17 points, 3 rebounds, 6 assists, 1.3 threes, 1.4 steals, 44 and 84, and hit 34% of his threes. It is a tremendous season. He played 65 games, which, considering the issue with the stress reactions in his leg, is great. The minutes are obviously low, but if he gets back and plays 30, 31 minutes a game next year, he's almost guaranteed to me to be a top 50 player. Again, like Tyreek, I don't think you have to take him inside the top 50. I think that the concern with his leg, and that's a rightful concern, the concern with Evans and the concern with Holiday are more rightful than concerns with Davis to me moving forward. I understand the concerns with Davis, but the recurring issues with Evans and Holiday are more worrisome to me than freak sort of issues with Anthony Davis. But if Holiday, for some reason, and the way they manage him, which is a big possibility, if the way they managed him last season enabled his leg to actually heal, and yes, he did get shut down to end the season, that's because he broke his face, nothing to do with his leg. So that's a bit of a relief there. Yes, it's not ideal that he broke his eye socket, but again, that's the fluke injury that I'm talking about that you don't really care about. It's like, if he had to shut down the season because his leg was showing hot spots and it was sore again, Bradley Beal style, then I'd be concerned. What we had this year is just a very slow a methodical program to ease him back into basketball without any setbacks, and that is a huge positive to me, that every step of the way, it all went to timetable. Yep, Drew's looking good. Let's increase his minutes. Let's start playing in big minutes without any setbacks or any issues, and that's great news. Let's just hope it continues from here on, because he is a supremely talented player, Drew Holiday. He finished 3rd on this team in win shares. He finished 6th in win shares per 48. His box score plus minus, he was 3rd on the team there. In VORP, he was 2nd. Obviously, they're putting up some pretty impressive numbers. He had a PER of just under 20 as well, a true shooting of 53%, putting up some big, big numbers. And he is a former All-Star, and he is a really good player, and I really like what he can do as a fantasy asset. You just have to be able to absorb that sort of risk. Again, I think he's a top 50 guy next season, but I don't think that I'm taking him as a top 50 player. And I don't think you have to take him as a top 50 player just because of the injury risk that is associated with him at this point in his career. But remember, he's only 25. He has not hit his best. And if the way that they managed him enables him to stay healthy, then we're going to see some big seasons from Drew Holiday in the next 2 to 3 years, and he could very easily be a top 25 guy. That is absolute ceiling, but it's not crazy to say. Like, I could say anyone's going to be a top 25 player. I could go out and say, you know, Josh Richardson will be a top 25 player, and I'd be crazy. But to say that Drew Holiday is going to be a top 25 player is not out of control at all. He is not that far away from it. And we saw down the stretch, when you finish at 21st in post-All-Star break rankings, you're there and you're starting, and that was him ramping those minutes up. Now, Elvin Gentry misused him a lot of the time. I hated them playing him as a backup, especially when their starting unit was getting its absolute ass kicked. And this is when Tyreek was out, and you're starting absolute shit kickers like Norris Cole and Tony Douglas ahead of him. And then Okay, so then the thought process comes out. Okay, Gentry wants a ball handler on the second unit. He wants Holiday. Yeah, okay, fair enough. But A, your starting lineup was getting killed. Every game you go into with a disadvantage because your starters were getting absolutely destroyed, and that's a bad thing. And secondly, then Gentry comes out at the end of the year and goes, oh, I think I'm going to put Drew into the starting lineup just so we can see and see maybe if he can become a starter for this team, if he's got starter potential, or see how he works as the starters. Okay. Has Alvin Gentry not watched the NBA for the past 4 years? Drew Holiday is a starting point guard. He's been a starting point guard almost his entire career. He was an all-star point guard. It's safe to say that he can handle being a starter. Not injury-related, but Gentry wanted to see how he would go as a starter in this league. Gentry, get your head out of your ass. That is not how it works. That is not how Holiday is. He is a starting point guard. And that sentence, that quote alone from Gentry made me just... I'd bashed him enough during the season, and I just went, this guy is struggling. And let's hope that he doesn't continue to go that way and go, let's start Tyreek and put Drew as the bench guy, because that is a poor move. Holiday has much more potential moving forward than what Evans does. As much as I like Tyreek, Holiday is the better player there, and the player they should be building around with Davis. Let's hope that he can stay healthy. Eric Gordon. He's another guy who is injury prone, but thankfully over the last couple of years, it hasn't been his knees, which was what gave him lots of problems early in his career. He dealt with broken fingers twice this year, broke it, missed 4 weeks, came back, re-broke it, out for the season. And he's never going to play for the Pelicans again at this point, it looks like. A solid season, 72nd in NICAT leagues, 82nd in 8CAT leagues. Didn't play very much at all after the All-Star break, so his pre and post splits, not much point looking at those, but he had some nice moments. He played 33 minutes a game in his 45 games, 15 points, 2 rebounds, 2.7 assists, a steal, and 2.5 triples, which he hit at 39%. He was 42 and 89 from the field and from the line, respectively, and he is that guy that hits threes. He hits 2 threes a game, and he hits them at almost 40%, and that's been a consistent story for him over the last couple of years. He's a decent ball handler, almost a 3 assists per game sort of player, and that's nice out of a shooting guard. But what he is a horrible, horrible defender. He is really, really bad in that sense, and that limits what he can do on a team. He was in defensive box score plus minus for the team. He was 17th. Behind him was Orlando Johnson. Yep, Orlando Johnson played for this team this year. Ryan Anderson, Jimmer Fredette, and Nate Robinson. Hardly a murderer's row of defenders there, and that brings down his overall value to a team. Still, with how good he was offensively, he was 7th overall in box score plus minus on this team. His win shares put him at 5th, despite the fact that he played just 45 games. So he does have a lot of value, but he won't be back on this team, and he could find himself anywhere. Now, he's a guy that I talked to in yesterday's Minnesota Timberwolves podcast. They asked what sort of player, what sort of sharpshooting wing could they be looking at. Eric Gordon, sitting over there in Minnesota, he'd have to adjust to a bench role, but he's a guy that goes out there and hits threes, and he could be hidden in a Tom Thibodeau defense to some degree, or at least Thibodeau could get him to try on defense. He might be an interesting fit in Minnesota, but he probably needs more of a starter's role. But as Eric Gordon, in terms of fantasy, he's always a guy that gets drafted outside the top 100, but to me, he's a player who can easily develop or deliver numbers that put him inside the top 100, which we saw him do this season. He's getting a little bit older now. He's how old is he now? He's 27 years old, so right in the peak of his career. But the next 2 to 3 seasons, he should still be able to produce at a pretty high level. In fact, I wouldn't hate him going to the... Actually, I would love if he went to the Knicks. At this point, Aaron Aflalo's garbage. We know that. Langston Galloway, he's not much top. But putting him there as a shooting guard with the Jeff Hornacek system, I think Jeff Hornacek slash triangle, hopefully more Hornacek than triangle, I think the Gordon would work out well there. And to me, again, value for Gordon is pretty low, and I don't think you'd have to pay a huge amount to acquire him at this point. And I think that you're going to get some decent top 70, top 80, probably top 80 value from him at this point in his career, and I'm almost certain that you won't have to pay that sort of price to get him. Ryan Anderson. I am far from the biggest Ryan Anderson fan, and this happens to me with a lot of players. I will get on players early. I was big on Ryan Anderson before his Orlando breakout. I didn't have a podcast at that stage. I was big on Aaron Aflalo back in his early time with the Nuggets before he went to Orlando. I thought this guy is a real solid end of your fantasy bench sort of player. And then they get overrated and they get overvalued and they lose a step and people don't necessarily pick up on that. And that's happened with Aflalo, and to me it's happened with Anderson. He has gone through a terrible time in terms of injuries, personal tragedies, but in terms of his basketball and his fantasy ability, it is not as high as what some people think. Now, overall, his numbers were pretty good. He finished 70th in 9-cat leagues. That's great. He finished 85th in 8-cat leagues. These are pretty decent numbers. But his defense is absolutely horrible, and he will get overpaid by some team. If your team is paying $20 million plus for Ryan Anderson, that is $20 million that has not been well spent. He can do one thing really well. He can shoot threes. He hit 37% of his threes. He made two per game and scored 17 points. He cannot defend. He is a poor rebounder, but he's a great free throw shooter. So his fantasy numbers for the year, 30 minutes a game, 17-6-1, two triples, 0.6 steals, 0.4 blocks, 43-87. Yeah, they're pretty okay numbers. But does he have scope to improve on that? He was dealing with that sports hernia to end the year, but before that, there wasn't really many injury concerns for him. I think it's hard to have him as a starter playing 34 minutes a game just because of the exceptionally porous defense that he brings. What is his role? Talked about it with Matt on the Suns podcast. I'd rather have Mirza Teletovic than Ryan Anderson because you don't have to pay anywhere near as much and you get basically the same player. Now, for a fantasy purpose, what does he bring? He brings you threes, but you can find threes in a number of different areas, I think, and I don't value what Ryan Anderson does from a fantasy point of view. I just don't think that he's, with his back being as shot as it is, I'm not sure he's going to age all that well, and he's got to be able to play a modicum of defense and be able to play something physical. Now, we talk about Enes Kanter's defense being bad, which it is at times. It sometimes get overblown how bad it is, but Anderson's is worse. He's nowhere near as physical. He can't guard. He can't rebound. He can't do anything in that respect. He's a shooter, and that's literally all he is at the moment. He posted the third worst defensive box score plus minus on this team. He was 11th and in a total negative in terms of his actual box score plus minus at a negative 1.4. These are not good numbers. Yes, he was second on the team in win shares, but he played 68 games, but he was fifth in win shares per 48. So he did help, but he does have a lot of downside, a lot of negatives associated with his game. I think that he probably, in the 70 to 80 ranking that he had this year, he might get that again next year, but I think it'll be a slow decline to me, and I think he falls outside the top 100 pretty soon. He's not someone that I'm wasting a pick on, and that 70 range, I just don't think that he's got potential to go higher than that, and the risk of him falling lower than that is too big. Now we head on to just talking about a whole bunch of sort of crap. And no offense to these guys, because they could kick my ass any day of the week. But in terms of what they do and whether they're going to be around or not, we don't know. The first one we start off is Jordy Hamilton, who's a player that I liked when he was with the Denver last season. And he put together some flashes this year. He finished 177th in 9-cat leagues and 160th in 8-cat leagues. But a lot of the rankings for these guys we're going to touch on are inflated because they had to play a stack of minutes. Now, he played 28 minutes a game, Jordy Hamilton, in the 11 games he played. 11.5, 5.5, 2.5. 1.2 threes and 0.7 steals, but he was overtaken by James Ennis to be the starter, and that does not bode well for Hamilton. Maybe he comes back on as a serviceable backup wing, but he won't play 28 minutes a game again in the NBA. If he comes back, there's no chance he's playing any of these numbers. He showed that he can fit in the league, he showed that he can play in the league, but really, is there much upside with Jordan Hamilton at this point? I have to go, if I have to say one way or the other, I say no. I just don't know what he brings from here on out that really helps this team. Now, in his win shares per 48, they were okay. Well, actually, no, they weren't. They were actually terrible. He was 17th on the team in win shares per 48. They're not good numbers. His box score plus minus, 12th, in negative 2.2. So he didn't provide anything offensively. He didn't provide anything defensively. And these are things that are not cumulative numbers. They're rate statistics. So it's based on the fact that he only played 11 games doesn't come into consideration. Not a massive fan of Jordan Hamilton, despite the fact that some of his numbers looked pretty good. Tone Douglas, the 30-year-old that I was speaking about, earlier on, he put together some decent games as well. But again, it was with Tyreek out, it was with Drew out, it was with Norris Cole out when he was forced into big minutes. You know, post All-Star break, he was ranked 107th in 8-cat leagues. That's really good for Tony Douglas. It'll also never happen again. Douglas played 61 games at 21 minutes a pop, 8.5 points, 2.3 rebounds, 2.5 assists, over a steal, over a three on 41 and 85. That partially guaranteed contract, if he's brought back, where does he fit? Obviously behind Holiday, obviously behind Evans, most likely behind Frazier if he's returned, and probably behind Cole if he is returned as well, which is not something I can necessarily get behind. Not sure there's really a lot to love with Tony Douglas. If he is not on an NBA roster next season, I will be far from surprised. He had his moments, but he's just not a great player. His win shares per 48 were decent, 0.094, which was fourth on the team. He was fourth on the team in overall win share. So these are okay numbers. He definitely held his head high. But what upside does Tony Douglas give to an NBA team at the age of 30? Yes, he can come in and be a third string point guard, but I don't think we can really anticipate him being a top 100 player, which he flirted with post All-Star break. I just can't see that happening. And I can't see that being something that you have any sort of reliability on happening again. Norris Cole. If you own Norris Cole in a fantasy league, one, how did that happen? But secondly, this is a time to sell. He was putting up decent numbers, numbers that were very, very un-Norris Cole-like towards the end of last season, again, in an extended role. He played 27 minutes a night. He's an unrestricted free agent. He averaged 10.5 points, 3.5 rebounds, 3.5 assists, 0.7 threes, 0.8 steals, and 40 and 80% shooting. Yeah, not great numbers. He was ranked 222nd for the year, but 124 post-All-Star. Yeah, decent numbers. But he is really bad. He is not a good point guard. I would not be retaining him. I would be prioritizing Tim Frazier over him. I would be prioritizing drafting a point guard in that second-round pick or maybe even your first-round pick because Cole is just putrid at what he does. He did provide some decent defensive numbers, and I'll give him that. He wasn't horrible defensively, but he was still the 10th best player on this team in defensive win shares. He was 15th in defensive box score plus minus, so these are not good. He had a PER of 10.8, one of the worst on the team. His box score plus minus overall was 15th on the team. He just doesn't provide good numbers. He was 18th in win shares per 48. I can't stress this enough that he is one of the worst players in the NBA that plays decent minutes, and he was playing more than decent minutes to end the season. If you own him and somebody else likes Norris Cole and remembers what he did down the stretch when he was bludgeoned into minutes, sell him. Get anything. Get a top 150 player back for him. Get Gary Harris back for him. Get anybody. Get anyone. Get Cameron Payne for him. You're probably not going to be able to pull off these deals. He is really, really bad, and in a healthy team, he doesn't play. He might, I don't know where he ends up, but he is horrible. So don't expect much from Norris Cole. Jim Ennis, who I don't think got a fair shake in Miami, was traded to Memphis and waived, which was a dumb decision from the Grizzlies, ended up in New Orleans and looked very good. He was 218 on the season, but 102 post All-Star break. And yes, he won't play the sort of minutes that he played down the stretch. And for the season, his numbers don't look great. 7.2 points, 2 rebounds and assist. But 1.2 threes in 15 minutes is good. 0.7 steals in 15 minutes is also good. 48 and 74 is percentages and 45% from three. I don't think it gets much better than 45% from three. That's also a little fluky. And I'm not sure that it's going to be something that we're going to have James Ennis as a three-point marksman moving forward. But he showed an ability to improve. His three seasons in the NBA, he's gone from 27 to 33 to 45% from three. The last 3 months of the season, he hit 45% of his threes. He was consistently doing it basically all year. In terms of advanced numbers, he was second on this team in win shares per 48. His offensive box score plus minus at 4 led the team. His box score plus minus at 2.7 led the team. And there's obviously a lot of noise in this because he only played 9 games for this team. But still, what he was able to do in the short amount of time that he was here made me think that they need to retain him because their wing scoring ability is horrible. Alonzo G is not a good offensive player. Dante Cunningham is very far from a good offensive player. Ennis is a deep league guy who's got tremendous room to improve. He was the MVP down in the Australian Basketball League a couple of years ago. Never got a fair shake in Miami. Definitely didn't get a fair shake in Memphis. And I do like his upside a lot. I think that he can put together... Obviously, he's going to have to do it in more than 9 games, which he did for New Orleans this season. But I think that in terms of a 20-team league, an 18-team league, Ennis is going to be a player that I like. And in deeper dynasty-type formats, I like him even more. I think he can really develop into someone who becomes a top 200 player, and that's not saying much. And he'll probably never threaten the standard league radar as a must-draft guy. But in your deeper formats, which I'm trying to cater to all sort of situations here, I really like James Ennis, and I think he can bring quite a bit to some teams. Alonzo G. He has the occasional game where he goes out and scores 20 points and hits 3 threes, and you go, Jesus, what's going on here? And then he'll score 2 points for the next 3 games. He was 252nd in per game value, 384th in per 36. If you look at Ennis, who's 218th per game, he's 74th in per 36. So G uses up a lot of minutes and does nothing with him. He played 22.5 minutes a game in 73 games, 4 points, 0.2 triples, 3.5 rebounds, did shoot 52% from the field and had 0.9 steals, which is obviously a pretty nice number in those limited minutes. But I do not think that Alonzo G has a massive future in the fantasy game at all. He's 28 years old. He said he might opt out of that $1.3 million player option. Wouldn't be crazy, because as a perimeter defender, he can provide something. But this team needed offensive threats, and he is just not that guy who can produce offensive numbers. In terms of what his advanced numbers look like, do they do him any favors? Well, they do defensively. He was 3rd on the team in defensive box score plus minus. He was 4th on the team in his defensive win shares. He was 7th in overall win shares. His box score plus minus overall was 8, and that's with a really poor offensive game. So he does have some value on this team, but for fantasy, it just doesn't translate, and I don't think there's really much we need to get too excited about with Alonzo G, especially given his age. And again, if I'm picking between him and James Ennis in a really deep format, I'm taking Ennis because the arrow is pointed up, whereas G, I think his arrow is pointed sideways, maybe with a slight tilt downwards. Now let's have a quick word from our sponsor for today, which is Loot Crate. And if you're unaware, Loot Crate is a monthly subscription box service for epic geek and gamer items and pop culture gear. It's less than $20 a month, and every month you get 6 to 8 items, including licensed gear, licensed apparel, collectibles, and unique one-of-a-kind items. We have our own unique URL for Loot Crate, and it is lootcrate.com/redrock. And if you visit that unique URL and then you decide you want to sign up to Loot Crate, well, you've got the ability to use our coupon code, which is redrock, one word, and that saves you $3 off any new subscription. The crate for this month is over. The fine people over at Loot Crate are working on June's box as we speak, and I'm sure it'll be filled with fantastic goodies. But in the meantime, check out the offers they have. Check out the cheap subscription prices. Check out the great items that they've delivered in the past by going to lootcrate.com/redrock and browsing around. And it tells the people at Loot Crate that you came from listening to this podcast, that you love the NBA, that you love nerdy stuff, and you're not afraid to show it. So go to lootcrate.com/redrock and check out all the stuff they've got happening over there today. The next guy I'm going to talk about makes me a little bit disappointed because he is one of my boyfriends, and his name is Alexei Zhintsev. He was not given a fair shake to me this season. He has shown in previous years when he gets an opportunity, he will produce. Now, to me, he's very similar in that respect to Cole Aldrich, who is a guy that I cannot ever wrap my head around as to why he never gets an opportunity. And we finally saw this year just how good he can become. Zhintsev is the same sort of player to me. That give him an opportunity and he will actually shine. They started absolute stiffs like Omer Asik and Kendrick Perkins over Zhintsev during the course of the year, and it stunk. And when Zhintsev did get some opportunity at the end of the season, he turned in some really, really big numbers. But again, where does he fit moving forward on this team? He played 59 games at just 15 minutes a pop, which is way too low. But 6 points, 4.6 rebounds, 0.6 blocks, 48 and 84, nice percentages. He can be a guy who averages 1.5 blocks. He can be a points guy. He can score rebounds, or he can get rebounds. He can be really good with his percentages. But what does it mean moving forward? Well, he was 265th on the year in 9 cat leagues, 268th in 8 cat leagues, and these are okay numbers. But does he ever become a top 150 player? I think he's definitely got that ability. He was 130th in per 36 rankings if he gets an opportunity to start. Now, Omer Asik is signed to one of the worst contracts in the NBA. Do they move away from him? Could they start Zhintsev next to Davis? It's probably not the best pairing that's out there, but is it better than having Asik out there? I would have to say that yes, it is, because He's been terrible. Ashok has been absolutely terrible. Now, the advanced numbers do not love what Achinsa did this year. He finished 18th on the team in overall box score plus minus. His offense was a dreadful negative 4.3 in that metric. His win shares sort of sits right in the middle of the table on 12th at this team. Not really good numbers. He wasn't sort of thriving. Offensively, he did struggle at times, but defensively, he was good. He was sitting at a 0.9 defensive win shares in only 59 games and only 861 minutes. So some pretty decent numbers there, but did struggle offensively. I think that they're, after just signing him to a new contract, one that's a lot cheaper than Omer Asik's, I think they need to be giving him more than 14 minutes a game. That remains to be seen whether they will. And at this point, it's a risky proposition to really get too invested in Alexei Achinsa, given the way that Gentry didn't seem to love what he was providing early on in the year. He does have a lot to offer to me, and if he was for some reason to find himself in a role where he plays 25 minutes a game, then 16-team leagues, 14-team leagues, absolutely they're going to want a piece of Achinsa. But at the moment, there's not a huge amount of hope for him. To me, he's sort of going to sit in that if-only category, and I'll probably let him go. Dante Cunningham, 25 minutes a game in 80 games is just way too much for Cunningham. He provides nothing. Statistically wise, although he did hit 0.73s a game, which is a massive surprise to me, did it only at 32%, so they weren't the most efficient shots. 6 points, 3 rebounds, half a steal, half a block, 45 and 70. Nothing about what Dante Cunningham did stands out. He was 241st in 9 cat leagues, 275th in 8 cat leagues. These are not ideal numbers. These are not exciting numbers. Just snuck into the top 300 in the 8-2 category. And nothing about him really screams the potential moving forward. He was fifth on the team in win shares ahead of someone like Eric Gordon, but a lot of that's due to the fact that he played 80 games. And if we look at his win shares per 48, he's all the way down at 14th. So something like that, win shares, which is a cumulative stat, you have to sort of bear that in mind as games played and minutes played has a big part of it. We look at box score plus minus, he sits at 10th at a negative 1.2, which is not terrible, but it is ahead of a guy like Ryan Anderson and, of course, the aforementioned Norris Cole. He fills somewhat of a role, but on a good team, he's not playing 24 minutes a game. He's playing 15 minutes a game as a backup four, maybe a little bit at the three, which is probably he's not athletic enough and he's not as good enough shooter to play that position. But defensively, he does bring it and he's a pretty decent defender most of the time. As for his fantasy value, well, he will probably never crack the top 200. I wouldn't have thought. He had some decent performances occasionally, but nothing to be excited about. Timmy Frazier was a revelation to end the season. He was if you look at his overall rankings, 331 is not good. 301 in 8-cat is not good. Post All-Star break, we're looking at 83 and 71. So big jump from Frazier. He ended up playing 51 games for the year, split between Portland and New Orleans. 5 points, 3.2 assists, 2.2 rebounds, 0.6 steals. Again, these aren't really exciting numbers, but that's because he had to play in a different role, or he moved from being a player with no team to being a player who was basically running this team down the stretch. We look at the last 3 months in New Orleans, where he played 16 games. He played 29 minutes, went 13, 4.5, and 7.5, hit 0.8 threes, hit 1.4 steals. But the problem is I don't think he's a really good shooter. Now, he did hit 42% of his threes in New Orleans, but that to me doesn't feel overly realistic. He shot 45% from the field, which was up from 34% that he shot as a rookie. Again, don't think it's realistic. And he took his free throws up to 76. Now, he's not a 48% shooter from the line, which he was in his rookie year. I think 72 to 75 is okay, but he's also not a 42% three-point shooter, and he's probably not a 45% shooter from the field. Frazier, I think they should make it a priority to try and retain him, and him as a backup point guard behind Drew and behind Tyreek, I think fits perfectly. 15 to 20 minutes a night, and a player that could potentially be a top 250 player, maybe even a top 200 player if things broke right. But for you to expect him to be a top 60 guy like he was to end the season last year, I think you're dreaming. I can't see how there's any way that he becomes that sort of player. He needs a role where everyone falls down like 10 pins. And that's exactly what happened in New Orleans. But for it to happen again is going to require an extraordinary amount of bad luck on the Pelicans' part. And I just don't really see it being something that's sustainable or hopeful. Frazier was good, no doubt. Put together some really nice numbers. But what does it mean for him in the future? Not a lot. Now, his box score plus minus, he was fifth on the team. I think that's That's obviously fantastic. Win shares per 48, third on the team. Really good numbers. He played only 25 games. Sorry, he only played 16 games for the team, but still finished 10th on the team in win shares, ahead of Ajinsa, ahead of Norris Cole, ahead of Kendrick Perkins, who all played a lot more games than what he did for this team, ahead of Luke Babbitt, who again played more minutes and more games for the team. He posted a great PER of 19, just a real nice breakout, and it's going to earn him some money this year, and he should be back as the backup point guard. He's better than Cole, he's better than Douglas, so I guess it depends on gauging what you think of him and how deep your league is. But if your owner, if you own him, then you have to look at what offers you're getting in. If someone believes that he's going to be a top 150 player, you sell him. If someone else owns him and goes, everyone was injured, he's going to be back to the player that's ranked 400th, acquire him. It's all about gauging interest from starting trade discussions. What do you think of Frazier? Where do you value him? What do you think? And you use things to your advantage, like he was a top 60 guy the last 2 months. Yeah, he's got potential. Young guy, breakout, third season. Holiday's injured. Evans is injured. Sell him. But if you're going the other way and you're trying to buy him, just go, please. No one was there. No Davis, no Holiday, no Evans. Norris Cole was struggling. Ryan Anderson was out. He only did that because all those guys are out. Here, just give it to me for a second round rookie pick. That's about playing the field and using your negotiating powers to your benefit. But overall, I think that he is in line for a much bigger role overall next season. Not bigger than what we saw down the stretch, but as his overall season stats, a bigger performance. And I reckon he does have the ability to become a backup point guard somewhere. It might not be New Orleans, but I do think that he has a significant role in this league somewhere moving forward. So good on him, and by all accounts, just an awesome teammate as well, from everything you hear come out of Portland and from New Orleans. The players love him. He is going to be a player who sticks in this league for a little bit of time, and that's good for him. Lukey Babbitt. Look, he took advantage of, again, the injuries second half of the year, but to me, I'm not a fan. 292 for the year, 188 post-All-Star. He put up okay sort of numbers, 7 points, three rebounds, no defense, 42% shooting, and 40 from three. So he fills that role as a three-point sniper, but what do we expect from Luke Babbitt? He's 26 years old. He's got one more year on his deal at $1.2 million left. He's going to fill a role again because this team does need some outside shooting when you've got G and Cunningham playing the three and the four. A guy like Ennis and a guy like Babbitt can play a role, but would we expect him to put up the sort of numbers he did in the second half of the year? That's almost a definite no to me. He finished 11th on the team in win shares, but his win shares for 48 bring him down to 11th, so not a great number there. He was a negative on defense, a pretty significant negative in box score plus minus, and his offense was below par too. Not much to really like about Luke Babbitt, but he's really someone who comes in as a stream option for threes, and if he, for some reason, they go, okay, Babbitt's starting, and he's going to play 25 minutes in this one game, add him, because he's got a chance to hit six threes. He's got that sort of upside in a gambling sort of perspective. But as for overall consistency, you can relinquish him to the 20-team leagues, the 30-team leagues. That's probably about it with him. Bryce DeJean-Jones came across as a 10-day guy, signed for the rest of the season. I think one day after signing for the rest of the season, broke his wrist and was out for the year. As I mentioned earlier, he's got an unguaranteed year for the next couple of years. I would be pretty confident they bring him back, but what are we going to see out of him? He's not going to produce a huge amount to me, DeJean-Jones. He played 20 minutes a game in his 14 games, 5.5 points, 3.5 rebounds, but what he did do is he showed he could hit the three. He hit a three a game, had 0.7 steals, and he was a decent scorer. Does he bring anything to this team moving forward? His defense was okay, so I suppose there's a positive there. Overall, not a terrible signing and someone you can develop, but I've got him, I did have him in a 400 deep league. You've got to be really, really deep to expect much from DeJean-Jones. Yes, the Pelicans are going to have an open two-guard spot, so there's a possibility, there's a remote possibility that the Pelicans can play Frazier and Holiday and play Holiday as a two-guard and play Frazier, Holiday, Evans starting lineup. That's probably way off in terms of accuracy or way off in terms of probability, but there's going to be an opening at the two for this team. DeJean-Jones is not going to be a starter, or if he is, he'll be a Noah Vonleh starter, but that means there's minutes for him. That means there's 15 minutes for him with that departure of Eric Gordon and the possible departure of Norris Cole and the possible departure of Tony Douglas. there is minutes there. Of course, the number six pick could bring in a shooting guard, and Buddy Hield or Jamal Murray could start from day one on this team. Or maybe they bring in a free agent at the two guard spot as well, which is always a possibility too. Aaron Aflalo's name is a name that could come up also, as much as I dislike having Aaron Aflalo in the NBA. DeJounte Jones, look, young guy, a little bit of upside, and I think that he's got an intriguing situation for next season. It all depends on what the Pelicans do in the offseason with that two guard spot, what they do with Gordon, who is gone, what they do with draft picks, what they do with free agency. But there could be an opportunity as a backup role for him in that spot. We've got two guys left, and they are two of the biggest stiffs in the NBA. Omer Asik is dreadful. Kendrick Perkins is dreadful. Neither of these guys should have spots on your fantasy team. Omer Asik plays decent defense. He is an absolute stinker as an offensive player. He was third on this team in defensive win shares. Third on this team in defensive win shares at one. His win shares per 48, he was actually okay at 8th. His defensive box score plus minus, he finished 6th. But offensively, he was a negative 4. And that put him right down the bottom. You can say the same thing for Kendrick Perkins, who was equally atrocious. Asik finished 16th on this team in box score plus minus. Kendrick Perkins finished 17th at negative 4.2 and negative 4.3 respectively. Asik is signed to a ridiculously big contract. It is probably a worse contract than Nikola Pekovic at this point. He has got 3 more years left, and his last year on the contract is non-guaranteed. He's going to be paid an average of $10 million over the next 3 seasons, and he's pretty much unplayable most of the time. Now, they don't have anyone else to play because they're intent on playing Davis at the 4 when really he should be playing at the 5. And if they're going to continue running Asik and Davis together, it's not good. Now, Asik is not someone who provides fantasy numbers. He's in there as a, oh, look at Asik, center, defensive presence. He doesn't block shots. He grabs rebounds, and that is all he does. He misses free throws. He doesn't shoot. He doesn't score. He doesn't pass. He doesn't steal. He doesn't block shots. His shot blocking for this season, he blocked 0.3 shots a game in 17 minutes. And you go, okay, he only played 17 minutes. Well, double it. Get him at 34 minutes. He blocked 0.6 shots per game. For as good as a defender he is, for as good as a rim protector or a shot adjuster he is, he just does not block shots. He provides the ability for Davis to block shots, sure, and he shot 53% from the field. But on 2.9 attempts, it means bugger all. It means nothing in terms of what he contributes in that category. He hurts your free throws. He grabs 6 rebounds in 17 minutes. That's good, and that is literally all he does. So to me, he is a Sunday stream. I'm 20 rebounds behind. Who can get me 20? Maybe if Omer Asik pulls one out of his ass, he can have 20. And that is what he can do. As for Kendrick Perkins, there is zero. Nothing. You can't say anything good about Kendrick Perkins from an on-court and fantasy perspective. Yes, he's a tough guy. He's an enforcer. He's a great locker room guy. But he's a shit basketball player at this point. He can't put anything together statistically. And for fantasy, you need to be extraordinarily deep. And I would say in the Red Rock Dynasty League, 400 players. If he remains on the free agent list, I would not be grabbing him. I don't see where the upside is for a guy that's as old as he is and as unproductive as he is. That is all of the players on this team. I'm going to take a quick break, and I'm going to be back to address a couple of questions that you guys have had about this team. I saw you. This show up here with a couple of questions that you guys sent in about the New Orleans Pelicans. Pretty obvious questions, I think, but I'm still going to cover them if I haven't already covered the details off already. Danny Triella asks, should people be worried about AD? He can't seem to be healthy for a full season for Dynasty and Pelicans playoffs. I talked about that already. Yeah, you should be concerned, but that means that there has never been a better time to acquire him. You will get him at a discount in drafts. I've got a feeling that he plays 75 games next season and he returns to a top 3 player. It's completely based on gut instinct, but I think just as the body matures, as he starts to play with better players and the play, hopefully better players, and the players start to gel together in a more cohesive system, it should work out well for him moving forward. Let's hope so. Dave on Twitter at @NorthShore_Dave. Who are good fits in the draft and some realistic targets for the Pelicans in free agency? Now, as I touched on earlier, in free agency, they're not a free agent destination. It's hard for them to acquire free agents. So a name that I'll throw out there again, Kent Bazemore. He's a guy that I'm not a massive fan of, but they need some sort of scoring punch, or a guy who can be a 3-and-D player, which is what Bazemore showed that he could be this season. So he's a guy that I wouldn't hate arriving on this team and playing potentially at the 3 with Tyreek at the 2. Not a terrible fit. I think that's the sort of player that they need to be looking for. Now, another guy that they could look to replace Ryan Anderson with is Mirza Teletovic. He's going to be a lot cheaper than what Anderson is, and he would definitely be a guy that I'd like to bring in for a couple of years. Play Anthony Davis at center, play Teletovic at the 4, enable some spacing on this team, or on a team that's not full of great three-point shooters. I think the Teletovic would be a decent guy to bring in. They're not going to be attracting the top level of free agents. Not that Al Horford's not going to be considering coming here. Kevin Durant, Mike Conley, none of these players are going to be looking to come towards this team. Pau Gasol, you're not going to get him across here. There's just guys that just aren't going to make the move. You need to be looking at those lower tier, take a risk on some younger players. A Festus Ezeli maybe would be an interesting guy to pair with Anthony Davis. Harrison Barnes would be great on this team. Not sure he'd really want to come to New Orleans, and the restricted thing makes it hard, but I think he'd be great on this team, and they should make a real effort to get him. But that number 6 pick is the key one to me, and they've got a couple of directions they can go. They should probably go best available player, which is the way that most teams should go. But who's going to be available? I think that you're going to get an option between one of Hield or Murray. If either one of those guys, or if Dragan Bender's available, you take him. To me, he's the third best player in this draft, but if he's available at 6, you take him. Murray and Hield are two other options that I like there. Chris Dunn's name's going to be floated around, and people will say, I'll grab Dunn, develop him, and then get rid of Drew. I actually would prefer Drew Holiday. The age difference between Dunn and Holiday is only a couple of years, which is something that I don't think many people realize. When Drew Holiday came into the NBA, he was the youngest player in the league. So despite the fact that he's been in the league for so many years, and if they've got confidence in his leg injury, of course, they know more than I do about his leg, but I would be much, much preferring to be stick with Holiday than going with a Chris Dunn type who can't shoot either. Jaylen Brown would be a consideration to play on the wing. And the other option is you go with a big man, so someone to pair with Anthony Davis who's around at that spot. Jacob Poeltl from Utah, not sure I'm a massive fan of him at pick 6. Domantas Sabonis, maybe. Do you roll the dice and take a Marquise Chris? Probably not. I think you want to go with Hield, Murray, potentially Brown if he's available. I think they're probably the top three guys that I'd be looking for if I was the Pelicans. But again, we'll get more into the draft over the coming weeks. But I do enjoy these sort of questions when people ask. There are a couple of options for this team. I'm just not sure that Dunn is the right guy here, but he could very well be, because they might know more about Holiday, or they definitely know more about Holiday's injury situation than I do. But if Holiday's got the all clear, then there is no doubt in my mind that I want Holiday over Dunn, given the fact that the age difference is not as big as you might anticipate. Right, we are done today, guys. Speaking of done, follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_BBall. And of course, don't forget Basketball Monster on Twitter at @BaskMonster. Hardwood Paroxysm, where you can find this podcast hosted. And you might be listening to this on the Hardwood Paroxysm Network. Make sure you're checking out all the other podcasts there. Fast Break Breakfast, Quo Vadimus, Over and Back. Heaps of great stuff on the Hardwood Paroxysm Network, plus all the articles that come out on the website as well. Subscribe to this podcast on YouTube, or you can subscribe on iTunes as well, and leave a review. Give it a thumbs up if you're watching on YouTube. It helps tremendously, and thank you to everyone who does that as a regular thing. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.